St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville continues its Tippi McMichael Lecture Series this weekend. Dr. Elliot West, a professor and historian at the University of Arkansas, will deliver the latest lecture in the series, covering the history of Ghost Dancers, Wounded Knee, and Native American survival, where the infamous Wounded Knee Massacre left hundreds of Native Americans dead, mostly women and children. Ozarks at Large's Rachel Sanchez-Smith asked West how he plans to cover such a multifaceted and intricate story.
It was a time at the very end of the 19th century, 1889 to 1890, in which Indian peoples had been defeated militarily. All resistance had been crushed. They had been largely dispossessed and confined to reservations, agencies. And those agencies were intended to essentially to transform them into people who would fit into the mainstream of American cultural life. So their cultures were under attack, under siege. They had lost their lands, or control of their lands at least. So it was a bad time for them.
How do you go about telling a history that's so nuanced, that is so rich? How much context do you feel like you need to provide for the audience at the McMichael series?
It's always a question when you have 40 minutes to talk about something that's enormously complicated. I should say that I'll be drawing very heavily on recent work that has been done on this. This is not my own research, but there has been some fascinating and very revealing work that's been done over the past 10 years or so. Part of it by one of my students, a graduate of the doctoral program in our department, Justin Gage. So we know a lot more about it, and what we know about it now really casts it in a very revealing light, one that tells us a lot about what's going on, not only among Native peoples at the end of the century, but in America at large, at the nation at large. So I'll try to finesse that as well as I can, but it is a complicated story.
It is. And first, the story of Wounded Knee was so commonly referred to as a battle, but in more recent history, in a survey of the death toll, really paints the confrontation as a massacre. As a historian, how do you confront telling a story that's been told in so many different ways,
in so many different lights? Yeah. Well, as I said, we have some new research now that puts it in a new light. It was a massacre. Let's be very clear about that. There were deaths on the side of the army. How many of those were inflicted by the Indians? Nobody can tell. Probably the majority of them were from friendly fire. So at least 250 persons were killed, most of them women and children. They were slaughtered once the firing began. There was never any contest about who was going to win it. It was not a battle in that sense. But some of these people were gunned down, women and children, as they took refuge in a ditch, and the soldiers just came up to the edge of the ditch and shot them dead. So it was a massacre. But this whole episode of the Ghost Dance and Wounded Knee, it's often portrayed in popular culture as the ending of something. You know, it was like this terrible punctuation mark at the end of American Indian history. They had lost their independence, and so this sort of ties into this very mischievous and totally incorrect idea of the vanishing American. You know, that not only are Indians gone, but the Indian way of life has not survived. That is absolutely wrong. And if you study the Ghost Dance and you study Wounded Knee, I think what I will try to do is to emphasize that, in fact, Indian peoples are extraordinarily resilient and adaptive. And this all was just one chapter in that.
What was the significance of the ghost movement? And do we see remnants of that cultural importance trickle down through generation and remnants of the form of resistance that Plain Indians practice in the face of forced assimilation?
Yeah. Sure. It was a kind of resistance. Remember, as I said a moment ago, Indians were under cultural assault. And just at that point, this religion appeared in the far western Nevada, around the Walker River Reservation. Its prophet was a man named Wovoka, and that was his Paiute name. He had an English name, Jack Wilson. he had spent part of his growing up with the Wilson family, and he. What Wovoka said was that he had fallen into a trance, had traveled to heaven beyond the Milky Way, and there had been instructed by God, their God, how his people would be able to revive their older ways and how the earth could be regenerated, how the good times could return. The dead would return, thus the term ghost dance. They had to perform certain rituals, including this dance. They had to live by very strict moral codes. But if they did that, he said, and if they kept the faith, that this would happen. So in a way, that it's resistance in that sense. If you look more closely at it, as I will try to do Saturday night, there's all kinds of fascinating nuances of that that make it a more complex story. And by no means simply a story of these backward-looking people frozen in the past trying to save the vanished world. It's much more than that. But your question also was, are there any survivals of this? And absolutely. The ghost dance itself survived in parts of the West until the 1920s. But more to the point, what you see across the West, across the nation, are many, many cases in which Native people's religions, while in many ways they are outwardly Christian, in fact, they are woven through with other Native traditions. What they have done, once again, is to adapt, to assimilate. They have forms of Christianity, and they have given it their own stamp in a way of preserving their culture within this new religious tradition. And you see it. In addition, of course, there are strictly Native religions that have survived. The most famous example of this, of course, is the Native American Church, which also arose during these periods. It was called a peyote religion at that time. It's a recognized church today. The federal government in the 1970s gave it permission for them to consume peyote as part of their rituals, just as the federal government during Prohibition gave Christian churches the right to consume wine during communion. So that's an example of a native religion, which is shot through again with Christian ideas, but more common than that are ways in which Native people have taken the Christian denominations, Christians' belief and practices and liturgies, and given them their own particular stamp, their own meanings. Right. Yeah.
What kind of evidence? What kind of research documents do we know this history from? Is it through oral tradition? Is it through letters, documents? How do we know all of this?
Well, as I said, as you can guess, this has been studied over and over and over and over again. And most of the research has been based on documents written by, of course, the white government and white people. Even a lot of the earlier research was based on oral histories. A man named James Mooney, who was a famous anthropologist, interviewed Wovoka and others. What we see today is part of this new research is the discovery of other documents or the use of other kinds of documents. Again, my student Justin Gage has written this extraordinary book that came out last year that is based on his indefatigable gathering of thousands of letters written by Indians or dictated by Indians. Here's a wonderful irony. We sent Indian children to off-reservation schools. The purpose of that was to obliterate their own cultures. And part of that effort was to teach them English and to teach them and make them literate. What they did was take that literacy and use it to correspond among these dozens of groups across the West to cultivate this sense of separate Indian identity. It's a wonderful it's a wonderful irony. But those are examples of documents that we have begun to look at now, that Justin has looked at and given us an entirely different view of what was going on these reservations. These were not people sort of confined in cages. They were visiting hundreds of miles sometimes among each other. And really, once again, taking advantage of this new situation, adapting to it, and putting it to their own devices for their own purposes.
And what was your initial reaction to this newfound research and to find new information? I mean, what was that reaction like?
Well, initial reaction was, "Holy cow!" I didn't know this, but this makes perfect sense when you see this in the larger context of Native history from the time of the first European contact. This makes perfect sense. This is a theme. This is simply a more recent example of a theme that goes back, you know, to the early 17th century.
U of A professor and historian Dr. Elliot West will be speaking at St. Paul's Episcopal Church this Saturday at 7 as the latest guest in the Tippi McMichael Lecture Series. He spoke with Ozarks at Large's Rachel Sanchez-Smith yesterday.